everyone. This is Yvette Hampton. Welcome back to the Schoolhouse Rocked podcast. I am so glad you are back with me again today. And actually, you're not back with just me, but you're back with my husband, Garrett, and his guest, Alex Newman. So if you missed Monday's episode and yesterday's episode, you know that this is the world premiere of the Thinking Dad podcast. This is my husband's new podcast, and he is with his guest, his first guest, Alex Newman, and they're talking about education and biblical education and the importance of teaching our kids everything from a biblical perspective and how that plays into culture. And I mean, there's just so much packed into this conversation. You guys are going to be so encouraged by it. And so be sure to listen. Today is part two. Tomorrow we're going to play part three of that interview, and I know you're going to be blessed by it. But before we play part two, I want to say thank you again to our sponsor, BJU Press Homeschool. If you're looking for great homeschool curriculum that will really teach your kids everything from a strong biblical worldview, try them out at bjupresshomeschool.com. Now enjoy part two of Garrett's interview with Alex Newman on the Thinking Dad podcast.
All right, let's get back to our conversation with Alex. Alex, I have in my hands your brand new book, which I actually got to see before it was released, and I wrote an endorsement for it. And I'm going to do maybe the tackiest host thing ever. I'm going to read a portion of my endorsement because I think it's so important in this conversation. When I wrote that, I said, it's long been acceptable in the public discourse to say that public schools are failing. This statement is usually accompanied by a cry for more money, smaller class sizes, revised standards, improved teacher training, increased choice, or some other half measure to fix public education. Alex, are the schools failing or broken?
I wish they were, because, you know, we can fix things that are broken. When my car breaks, I either open up the hood and fix it myself, or I take it down to the mechanic and have him fix it, or, you know, buy the parts and do it myself, or have one of my kids do it. But unfortunately, we're dealing with something here with these government schools that is actually working exactly as intended by the people who designed it and who foisted it upon our country. And I think we start from the biblical premise, right? Who should be in charge of education? And the answer is not government. This is a new phenomenon. For almost 2,000 years of church history, almost everybody understood that education, discipleship, was not part of the duties of the civil government, of Caesar, of the governmental sphere. So we're starting off already on an erroneous foundation. We have put the responsibility over education on an institution that was never designed or intended to have that responsibility. But the reality is, and what we show in the first four chapters of this book, is that the people who dreamed up this system, the people who implemented this system, the people who reformed this system to turn it from what it was into what it is today, always had a plan. And that plan always was, from the very beginning, to undermine the Christian faith, to undermine the family, to undermine biblical principles like private property, like the free enterprise system, like the nuclear family, like the purpose of government. So that was always the intention. And this can be proven. This is not something that we have to speculate about. We've got the primary source documents, the writings of the architects of this system. And so I get frustrated when I hear people say the system is broken. It's not broken. It's designed to do what it's doing. And that's the hardest thing to get people to understand, Garrett. I'll stand on a stage and tell 100 people, hey, the system is working as intended. It cannot be reformed. And then when we get to the Q&A, people say, well, okay, so how do we reform this? Like, people just cannot get it through their heads that this was the plan. And so I'm glad you led with that. I think it's so critical, especially for us who maybe operate outside the system. We have to stop playing along with this idea that it just needs some tweaks or some reforms. It's like a cancer. It needs to be completely eliminated. And I'm not anti-education any more than I would be anti-farmer by speaking out against the collective farms of the Soviet Union. I'm pro-education, but what's happening in the public schools is not education. It was never intended to be education. I think a better term for it might be anti-education. It's designed to turn your children away from God. It's designed to really handicap your children in their pursuit of truth and beauty, and it's designed to give them values that are completely contrary to everything that God teaches. There's no way that can be considered education in any legitimate sense of the term.
It strikes me that the more we pour into the schools to try and fix them, all we're doing is strengthening and repairing a machine that that's already doing what it's supposed to do. So we can only make it worse by trying to reform the system. It really is time to start from scratch. And that foundation you mentioned was that ultimately parents are responsible and parents should be the primary educators of our kids. So it also strikes me that we need to be very careful as Christians when we lean toward the idea of Christian education in general, that we're not replacing the broken public school system with the Christian model of that. We need to be careful that parents are still the primary educators and that the foundations of that don't model after this thing that we know doesn't work for our nation. You have talked about Robert Owen and you glossed over John Dewey a little bit. Go back to the beginning and tell us who the people were who put this into play and what was their motivation. I know you've said Robert Owen meant to undermine the Christian faith. Go into that a little further.
Yeah, happy to do it. And I think Robert Owen is such an important historical figure, and he's almost completely unknown today. It's just very, very bizarre to me that such an important historical figure has been erased from our history books. But Robert Owen was, he was born in Wales. He married into a very wealthy industrial family that operated a textile operation. And he ended up taking over the textile operation. So he became very wealthy. And he had these very bizarre ideas for social reform. Of course, he rejected Christianity, which led to very seriously flawed conclusions. Like, oh, we don't need all this family stuff. Oh, we don't need this private property stuff. You know, to his credit, he was a true believer. A lot of the people who push these crazy ideas, they don't believe in this stuff. And they just see it as a means to expand their own power, their own wealth, their own control. It does seem to me like Robert Owen genuinely believed this silly stuff would work. And I say that because he actually bought a piece of land in Indiana and started a commune to kind of show how great these ideas would be. It's probably needless to say, but it failed very, very rapidly. It didn't even last for a whole 2 years. But what he wanted to do was try to show that we really didn't need families. And even before he started the commune, he was working on these things. So one of the things that he did with his textile operation was try out this new idea of, hey, let's get the kids from their parents really, really early and see if we can get them to think more like little collectivists. He wanted to pry these children loose from their parents at 2 years old and get them into these kind of daycare facilities. This was way before daycare was a real thing. So they started doing this, and they started doing these weird social experiments. Eventually, that culminated with this compound. Now, Robert Owen wrote a lot. He had all these different essays on his view about how government should operate. He ultimately wanted to eliminate private property. He wanted to sideline parents and have children raised by the collective. Of course, two full frontal assaults on God's divinely ordained order.
Have you tried CTC math yet with your child? Here's a testimonial from another happy homeschool mom. Amber said, "I'm absolutely thrilled with CTC math. It's a rare find that I've used with my children for more than 5 years now. I have 6 children using CTC math, and each child has found it easy to navigate and very applicable. Thank you so much for all that you are doing in providing quality math lessons for my children. If you're looking for a great online math program, visit ctcmath.com. That's ctcmath.com. Are you looking for a homeschool curriculum that goes beyond textbooks and truly engages your children in the joy of learning? Apologia's award-winning curriculum is written by homeschool parents to specifically meet your needs and captivate your students with hands-on activities and experiments that make learning unforgettable. With an easy-to-follow, open-and-go format, Apologia takes the stress out of planning and provides a simple roadmap that can easily be tailored to your family's needs. Explore live classes or self-paced courses designed to accommodate every student's unique learning style. Elevate your child's education, spark their curiosity, and nurture a lifelong love for learning with Apologia. Discover Apologia today at apologia.com.
He ultimately wanted to eliminate private property. He wanted to sideline parents and have children raised by the collective. Of course, two full frontal assaults on God's divinely ordained order for human life, etc. So he fails with this commune, but he comes to the conclusion that the reason it failed is not because he was rejecting biblical principles. The reason it failed is because these children who then became adults had been raised in an individualistic environment. That's a term you hear a lot with all these guys who are responsible for creating the school, the individualism, right? We got to reduce the individualism. So he set out to change this by having the government get involved in education. Now, I think for people today, that doesn't seem all that radical. For people 200 years ago when he was doing this, that was extremely radical. Government had essentially no role at all in education. Primarily, it was parents. And then to the extent that parents needed or wanted any help, they would go to the church. They would go to their neighbors. They would go to their extended family. There was no role for government to speak up. So he sets up what a whistleblower later described as a secret society. It's very, very interesting, this story, almost entirely unknown. But one of the guys who was involved with this secret society, Orestes Brownson was his name. He was very committed to this cause. He was actually organizing a part of New York State for this cause. And he said the twin objectives, on the surface at least, were changing public opinion, right? They wanted to go out and teach people why government ought to be involved in education. And then they wanted to get men elected to the legislatures of the states who would also support at least the camel's nose under the tent, right? They didn't come out and say, hey, we want your kids for 9 months for 7 hours a day. But just let the government have a little role. And then Orestes Brownson eventually becomes a Catholic, and he repents of his involvement in this wickedness and decides to blow the whistle. He writes a whole book about it. Wow. And he says that the ultimate objective, the end goal of this, in his words, was to destroy, to eliminate Christianity. And he says, you know, we weren't going to say that openly, right? But what we wanted, he says, was a system of state and then national education whereby we could exclude everything that couldn't be verified by the census. And he said, you know, we wouldn't directly attack the clergy, but we would bring them into contempt and ridicule them wherever we could. So that was the end goal. Now, why did they want to eliminate Christianity? Well, probably because they were serving Satan. But from their perspective, the reason was that Christianity was a giant obstacle to their plans. You couldn't eliminate private property when God said, thou shalt not steal. You can't steal people's stuff if everybody believes that it's a divine decree that you not steal people's stuff. You can't dismantle the family as long as people believe it's a divinely ordained institution. So that's why they wanted that idea. Now, the history here gets really interesting. According to Robert Owen, and it gets very hard to track, you know, secret society. Brownson said it was based on the Carbonari of Europe. But the ambassador for the dictator of Prussia gets a hold of these essays that Robert Owen had been writing. And he, according to Robert Owen, so much approved of these ideas. he was still smarting from losing a war with Napoleon. You know, things weren't going well in Prussia. They thought, maybe if I could just get more obedient serfs, maybe if they would just, you know, obey me without question, then maybe I wouldn't have lost that war. So he tells his interior minister, hey, take these documents, set up a school based on this. And that is the first system we can find anywhere of education of the state, by the state, for the state. And then that gets re-imported into the United States by another man who rejected Christianity. He was a Unitarian by the name of Horace Mann. Now, I can't directly trace the secret society to Horace Mann, but the principles are exactly the same. Horace Mann studied the Prussian system, and then his goal was to bring that into Massachusetts. That's exactly what he did.
Yeah, I'm struck by the life of another founder of modern education, John Dewey, who traveled to Russia, studied the Russian system, loved this socialist and Marxist system so much that he then came back and established teachers' colleges, and that flooded the school system. How deeply is Marxism embedded in modern public education?
Yeah, Marxism and modern public education are so intimately intertwined that they're basically inseparable, right? Marx was the first one. Now, Marx came after Robert Owen. So Robert Owen kind of pioneered some of these ideas before Marx even came on the scene. But Marx was very, very explicit. If you read the Communist Manifesto, one of the 10 planks, one of the key tenets, the key ideas of this manifesto was the idea that the government should educate children. And you know, people today read over that and they don't think it's a big deal, but they don't understand how unbelievably radical that sounded in the mid-1800s to people who had no conception of government involvement in education. So it's a Marxist idea. Now, John Dewey was a really interesting character. As you said, he was a communist through and through. He believed in the principles of communism. He went to the Soviet Union. And if you want to see what he thought about the Soviet Union, he left a huge paper trail. He wrote all these articles in the New Republic magazine, which are still available today. It's absolutely bonkers. I mean, you think this guy must have just lived in a different universe or something. No mention of the mass murder, no mention of the just ruthless and barbaric persecution of Christians, the effort to exterminate the church. None of that, right? Instead, he's crowing about the wonderful instilling of a collectivistic mentality into the children in these government institutions pretending to be schools. It's just bonkers. And so he ends up taking the system that Horace Mann had laid down and really weaponizing it radically. I mean, you know, Horace Mann would have liked to, I think, seen some of these things, but America was still way too Christian. I mean, when he proposed getting the Bible out of the schools, that was like, really? I mean, what is this guy talking about? How would you educate children without the Bible? By the time John Dewey comes along, we had already been dumbed down. We had already been through, you know, a generation or two of this. So by the time World War I is over, for the first time in American history, you have most children in government schools. And John Dewey, without even a close second, became the dominant influence in this school system. You know, he did have one difference of opinion with the Marxists, and I think it's important in the interest of fairness to point this out. You know, Marx and most of his disciples believed in violent revolution. They believed that the proletariat should rise up and essentially wage war on the bourgeoisie, the property owners, the businessmen, the owners of capital, etc. He believed that violence was a critical part of bringing about this utopia. He had this kind of dialectical view of history where conflict is what produces evolution, etc. And so he believed that a violent conflict was necessary to bring this about. John Dewey, in his defense, did not advocate a violent overthrow of the existing system. He advocated for a gradual approach. So he believed in the same end. He just had a different view on the means. Marx said, hey, let's rise up and murder these people, basically, if they want to submit to our new dictatorship of the proletariat. John Dewey said, no, that's not going to be effective. Let's do this gradually. Let's brainwash the children through a government school system. Let's get them little by little to embrace these ideas. He actually pointed to a novel that had been published in 1888 by another very, very prominent American socialist, who, again, has been written out of our history books despite his importance. His name was Edward Bellamy. This guy was so influential that all over the country, these Bellamy societies were popping up where all these intellectuals would get together and talk about how do we get there. And the goal, as Edward Bellamy put it out, he outlined it in his book, Looking Backward. He outlined this future of a communist America in the year 2000 where there would be no private property, where the family would disintegrate, and we'd have this utopia. So that was John Dewey's view. And he worked really, really hard to bring that view about through the manipulation of children in the schools.
I hope you've enjoyed part two of Garrett's interview with Alex Newman on the Thinking Dad podcast. Stay tuned to the very end to hear what's coming up next on the podcast. And again, you can find everything at our website, schoolhouserocked.com, where you can watch the movie for free, Schoolhouse Rocked, The Homeschool Revolution, which was directed by my husband, Garrett Hampton. And you can also make a donation if you'd like to make a donation to the Schoolhouse Rocked Ministry or find anything else. You can find it there, schoolhouserocked.com. Have a great rest of your day, and we will see you back here tomorrow for part three. Bye.
I think it can be easily demonstrated that John Dewey understood that literacy was the key to, first of all, biblical understanding, second of all, independence and freedom. If you can't educate yourself, you are a helpless person. You know, today with YouTube and audiobooks, you know, some of us can overcome that handicap, but 100 years ago, we didn't have YouTube and audiobooks, right? You were completely at the mercy of the education establishment if you couldn't read. So I think this was done deliberately for the purpose of dumbing down Americans so that they could be manipulated into giving up their freedoms, giving up their families, and ultimately surrendering all of the things that God had blessed our nation with that we were entrusted to be good stewards over.